KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I'm Kim Masters, and I'm excited to present a new monthly podcast from KCRW's The Business. It's about TV and how we watch it. Here's Michael Schneider of TV Guide magazine.
Thanks, Kim. Joining me is Joe Adalian of Vulture.com. Hey, Joe.
Hello, Michael.
And also AJ Marischal of Variety. Hey, AJ.
Hi, Mike.
So here's what we're going to be talking about this time on this edition of the podcast. First off, the state of comedy, and especially on broadcast TV, it is troubled. It remains troubled. We'll discuss that. Also, The Walking Dead, that phenomenon. Those ratings are in. It's a huge hit. What can we learn from the success of that zombie show? And finally, we'll talk about social TV from Twitter to Facebook to Second Screen. There's a lot going on and a lot that the broadcasters are doing with Second Screens these days. So let's jump right in, guys. First off, comedy. Thursday night, NBC. What a disaster.
Nothing to laugh about.
Not at all. And you remember that was once upon a time the home of shows like Seinfeld and Friends. And by the way, two of the most profitable syndicated shows of all times. And comedy is very important to this business when it comes to syndication and traditionally where this business has made most of their money. There aren't a lot of comedies on deck going forward for syndication, and I don't see a lot of new comedies coming down the pike that are going to be much success going forward. So guys, let's start off by talking about just the state of comedy.
I think that we vastly overestimate the comedy problem on television. I think that that NBC absolutely has a comedy problem. They have a brand, or did have a brand, of smart, sophisticated comedies. That brand wasn't big enough for them, and so they decided to change it up and try to be more like CBS, and it's failing spectacularly. But in general, I think that comedy is there are more great comedies than ever before. They're just not on the networks. And so is there a I think there is a problem with comedy on NBC. There's a lesser problem with comedy on the networks. But if you look to cable, there have never been more great comedies than ever right now.
Right. If you like smart, sophisticated comedies, there's shows like Veep on HBO. There's Louie, of course, on FX. These are shows, though, that cater to very narrow niche audiences. And that's sort of where comedy seems to be going. If whatever kind of comedy you like, there is a home for you. It's just there's no such thing as broad-based comedy anymore, really, other than The Big Bang Theory. AJ, what do you think?
Well, I think that one of the most disheartening shows on NBC's Thursday night lineup right now is Sean Saves the World. And it's disheartening because you have Sean Hayes, who hails from the powerhouse Thursday night NBC lineup,
right,
in the
Will
days of Will and Grace.
Yeah.
So his return to television, you're like, oh, yes, Sean's coming back. He was hilarious as Jack on Will and Grace, only to have such a broad comedy that clearly is getting so many notes from the network. They were recasting certain characters and whatnot, that it's floundering. And it's saddled up against Welcome to the Family, which is not a strong show either. I'm reminded of remarks that Tina Fey made at the Emmys, where she said, when she was accepting her award for 30 Rock, how grateful she was towards NBC for giving her room to grow creatively, for not focusing so much on the ratings, for letting it be a smart niche comedy. And would it be so bad for NBC to say, you know what, we have broad dramas like The Blacklist, we have tentpole reality shows like The Voice, and we're the home of smart, smaller comedies. Is that so bad? And I think that in terms of comedy, we also need to remember viewers are looking towards reality TV also for comedy. You know, Duck Dynasty, which is essentially scripted at times, is a docu-comedy. Honey Boo Boo is a docu-comedy. Discovery Channel's, the name of the show is escaping me. It's their answer to Duck Dynasty.
But does it have the name Redneck in it?
It does focus
is
on redneck
naked
culture. But, All these reality shows are starting to take on more comedic tones also, and they're pulling bigger ratings. So, people can go elsewhere for their laughs now.
Well, I think, back in the day when Modern Family launched, it was a huge hit, and The Office in its heyday was big too. So there obviously is an audience for smart, sophisticated, single-camera comedy, but
Modern Family is still a big hit, Mike.
And it is, it is.
And How I Met Your Mother is still doing very well. The networks still have good shows, but most of those come from a place of passion, right? And that's the problem with some of these shows, especially on NBC, is that they have no passion behind them. They seem to be, let's find a star and just sticking them in something else, which is what you did 20 years ago. I mean, Louis C.K.'s show was not created just because of, I mean, it was because of Louis C.K.'s comedy, but it was because of what he wanted to say. It wasn't just because Louis C.K. was some great big voice. And same thing with Sunny in Philadelphia. No one even knew who those people were. I think the problem is actually, even when networks find good comedies these days, they don't know how to stick by them and support them for the most part. You look at ABC right now. I mean, ABC, first of all, is doing its comedies no favor by launching so many of them at once and expecting everyone to suddenly just tune in, watch my shows because we're ABC and you should watch it. That doesn't happen. And so they actually have some good shows. Trophy Wife is a very, very funny new show on ABC that's getting lost because it's just one of 18 shows ABC launched this fall.
And I love the Goldbergs, though, on ABC. I think that is one of the strongest new comedy entrants. And speaking, as you're saying, coming from a place of passion, Adam Goldberg, he actually tweeted at me after I was complimenting the show on Twitter.
This is why you like the show.
And no, he hit me up like three episodes in or something. I really, really enjoy the show. And he was saying that some of the lines in it are direct quotes from his mother. And at the end of the show, he'll actually show home videos. The entire show is based on his childhood in the 80s, this young writer. And you can just really feel the authenticity in it. And that's a much different strategy when it comes to putting on a comedy than, as Joe was saying, you know, here's a format, plug in the star,
well,
cue the laugh track.
On the flip side, I think we were all excited to see Rebel Wilson come to television. Of course, the Australian actress who we all remember from Bridesmaids, she was the roommate, great, fresh talent. And she got her own show produced by Conan O'Brien, of all people, called Super Fun Night. But it should have been a slam dunk. But unfortunately, not so much. And Joe, I mean, you've been kind of an apologist for this show. But
first of all, the ratings are not that bad. I mean, it's doing what any show behind Modern Family does. It loses about 35% of the audience, which is fine. And I'm not an apologist for the show. The pilot that was originally filmed and shown to critics was awful. And ABC very smartly decided not to air it. Since then, you only see flashes of a show that might be good. I think this is another case where, you know, we in the media can get way too quick. We send varying messages to the networks, which is you have to be patient and support new shows. And boy, that bombed. Why are you keeping that show on the air? The thing is, sometimes in addition to just giving creatives room to do what they need to do and show their passion, it also helps if you give them time to find their voice. And I think with Rebel Wilson, you've got someone who's in control of her show and what she wants to say. Give her a little more time to figure it out.
I mean, no doubt the media loves to snark on the Big Four, and then God bless the CW just shit on the CW.
that's what this entire podcast is about, right? Us just kind of snarking all over
everyone.
But
I mean, yeah, we do sort of, you know, say, what the hell is this dud that you put on the air? And then the next hour say, you need to give your shows some patience and not pull them so quickly. But we're saying, give shows patience to the shows that are good. And we're saying, what is this dud to the shows that are bad? And, you know, a lot of times these shows that are struggling, shows like Sean Saves the World, Welcome to the Family, and Super Fun Night, from what I understand, that just get so many notes from the network where, you know, you hire this talent, these really respected comedic talents out in the television space that people are excited about, and then you just put them in these constraining boxes, you know, where suddenly their abilities are limited. And I think about how, you know, a Tina Fey comedy just landed at Fox in the development season, and viewers are getting so savvy to this idea that they can't trust big talent on a network that they're saying, oh God, I hope that, you know, Fox doesn't mess this up.
Well, let's switch gears now and talk about a show that actually is working and quite well. And The Walking Dead is a show that on paper probably shouldn't be working. They're on their third showrunner now. It's a show that's constantly killing off major characters, fan favorites, and it's on AMC, this little network that barely existed until about, you know, 8 years ago when Mad Men and Breaking Bad came on the air. But now it's the biggest show on television. The season 4 premiere of The Walking Dead came back to over 16 million viewers, which is something every broadcast network executive would salivate over, but it's on a cable network. So what went right, and how is this show such a phenomenon? AJ?
I think that what's really interesting is that The Walking Dead has straight horror sequences. I mean, that show is graphic at times. Like, I can hardly stomach it sometimes. And yet it's drawing such a big audience. So Walking Dead is this insanely interesting case study in having a very niche show that somehow manages to go super broad. And maybe it's that zombies are really in right now and post-apocalyptic world films and television shows are really in right now. And Walking Dead has compelling characters. At the end of the day, the AMC execs and the creatives will say this is a show about relationships. This goes beyond the actual zombies. So the quality of programming is there. But how interesting is it that as we're talking about the importance of being broad on broadcast to get those ratings, you have a show that has graphic horror sequences that you would usually think are just drawing meager audiences of fanboys of that genre, and yet 16 million people are tuning in.
But what do you think, Joe?
Well, here's the thing. I think AMC is caught, you know, what AMC smartly did was it for a while, even before it launched The Walking Dead, they used to have horror movies in October. But horror is a huge genre in this country. And if done well and sufficiently grisly, it can bring millions of people to the box office to watch a horror movie. And the problem is that the networks is they're so constrained by their own standards and practices and what they think advertisers will buy and what Washington will say if they're too violent that they can't really do horror the way horror needs to be done. Horror needs to be grisly. Horror needs to scare you. There's always been an audience for that. And more importantly, what's great about Walking Dead is it appeals to both females and males because that you see that phenomenon at the box office. Women will go see horror movies, sometimes with their boyfriends, sometimes not. And what AMC is doing is it's capturing that audience on a weekly basis. And it's also the other thing it's done smartly is what cable always does, which is nurture these shows. You know, it airs all the episodes in a row so there can be some momentum built. It only does 13 episodes a year or so, and it splits them up into smaller pods so people don't have to deal with repeats. I mean, AMC shows do well, as do so many other cable shows, because they know how to treat it as an asset, as a precious thing that they need to nurture, as was the other networks like ABC, which just throw on five shows at once and say, hey, watch. And then if you don't like it after 2 weeks, it's gone.
I was going to say, Joe, this is a show that launched. It was created, obviously, by Robert Kirkman, who created the comic books a few years before that. But Frank Darabont, of course, the filmmaker, developed it for television, really sort of created the look and feel of the show. But he was canned after 1 year. Glenn Mazzara came in, was the showrunner for 2 years. Now he's gone, and Scott Gimple is the third showrunner on this show now. How does a show survive with so much turnover at the top and yet still
brains.
Come back? Yes. You need to feed the beast.
Well, I would think the obvious thing, and look, I'm trying to get it straight. Maybe AJ knows more about this, and please illuminate if you do. I've never been able to get to the bottom of what's going on behind the scenes at that crazy thing at AMC. But I'll say this, the one person who's still there throughout it all is the creator of the comic book franchise. It seems like AMC actually did overall respect the most important person in the Walking Dead brain trust is the head brain himself. So not taking anything away from the other people who obviously translated his vision into a television show because it's a very hard thing to do, but at least they've been consistent in keeping the original vision there. That's not such a dumb thing.
Well, I think it's genius now, looking especially at those 16 million viewers who tuned in on Sunday night, that they're planning a spinoff. And we don't know what the spinoff's going to be yet. We don't know when it's going to air.
Vaguest press release ever.
We don't have much information.
Zombies, new characters. It's happening.
And you're going to watch it. But are we shocked at this point? Do we think this is the smartest thing AMC's done since picking up The Walking Dead? AJ?
Well, I'm surprised that you're not seeing more zombie development on other networks, you know.
Oh, you will.
But at this point, I mean, we're 4 seasons into Walking Dead, and this has become a phenomenon. We're still not seeing scripted zombie shows popping up on other networks, which is kind of surprising to me. It's more like we're seeing gory shows popping up on other networks. The sensibility is migrating outwards. I think it was Discovery and a few other networks had their own what if zombies were running around type ordeal. But in terms of AMC developing a spinoff, I mean, why the hell not? There's clearly an appetite for this world that they've created.
I'll add, by the way, you know, the latest Sprint commercial is all about a zombie in a cell phone store.
It is.
There you go.
The Walking
Dead.
You watch
commercials, Mike?
The Walking Dead video game series is also really interesting. You know, they've created this whole world that's really rich with potential for spinoffs and other properties. So, you know, more power to them for investing in it.
You know, I see it's funny. I on one hand, I agree with AJ 100% that why not? Why not go after the same audience? Why not
try to find something
interesting? However, let's also point out that what AMC is doing, though, does look sort of very desperate and very network TV circa 1990. Hey, Friends worked. Let's do Joey. You know, it's sometimes...
Well, they're doing that with their after shows, you know, right now, which is not on the same level, but they're going where it works.
That's fine, because that's just giving people a chance to vent. I mean, by the way, Mike Schneider and I came up with the idea for this, or maybe it was just Mike, with Lost. I know Mike was always a proponent for an after show for Lost.
Yeah,
anyway,
because I wanted to host it, but that's a different story.
But I think that the one thing is the one thing AMC has to be careful about is taking away the people on The Walking Dead's focus from that show, and it looks sort of networky. That's sort of what networks do.
Yeah. Cannibalizing the zombie genre?
Basically,
huh?
Yes.
I see.
And I'm turning your microphone off right now.
I'm not saying.
Look at it from this way. Walking Dead's only on a certain part of the year, so
that
why
helps.
Not have an entire year's worth of zombie programming?
Well, exactly. Why not have 50 shows? Why not just make AMC zombie television? Look,
hey,
I'm not...
But
that's the typical network thing to do.
Hyperbole is so great.
That's what they have to be careful about. I understand the logic behind it. I think if it's done right, it might be okay. The fact that they only produce 13 episodes a year as opposed to 24 with a typical network show, that helps too. At the same time, you know, sometimes too much of a good thing is too much. And that's the one cautionary note. But, you know, what do I know? I think
for quite a while, three CSIs worked quite well for CBS. Two and possibly three NCISs are going to work just fine for CBS.
And that's the network model, which I think is dying quickly.
Well, but they're still making a lot of money. So let me take a moment here to let you all know you're listening to the new monthly all-TV podcast from KCRW's The Business. I'm Mike Schneider from TV Guide magazine, and I'm here with AJ Marischal of Variety and Joe Adalio of Vulture.com. So guys, let's move on to our next topic, social TV. AJ, this has you written all over it.
How dare you stereotype me in my demographic?
It's all true, right?
Yes.
So I sit at home and I've got the iPad in my lap as I'm watching TV, and sometimes I'm tweeting, sometimes I'm surfing as I'm watching television. But the second screen, maybe it's not all it's cracked up to be. An ABC exec recently said that they were no longer going to support second screen apps because people weren't using them and they were distracting. People weren't watching the shows that these second screen apps were supposed to be helping. But at the same time, it seems like that whole world is here to stay.
Well, there's a difference between a second screen app and social media in the social TV space. The primary difference being that second screen apps usually suck, and using social media as a way to continue conversation about a TV show while it's happening is awesome. But if you're watching a super compelling drama like Breaking Bad or Walking Dead or, you know, The Blacklist on NBC or Scandal, do you really want to be syncing your phone and going through an app during these huge pivotal plot-turning scenes? No, absolutely not. You want to be tweeting every once in a while, oh my God, did you see that? And so, you know, Nielsen is, of course, lagging behind, but finally came out with a report last week, early October, saying, hey, yeah, people are tweeting while they watch television, and here are the top 10 shows that people are tweeting about. And surprisingly, there's not that much of a correlation between the highest rated shows on television and the highest tweeted
shows. Well, you say
shows.
Surprisingly. I don't find that surprising. People are not tweeting about NCIS.
It's the number one
show on television, but no one is tweeting about NCIS.
But you still would think that maybe, say, some of those sports broadcasts would drive more social media activity, but they're not. Breaking Bad was topping the list. Scandal is still a really hot social TV performer. So, you know, as I've been saying that I think we're in this era of must-discuss TV where, you know, the shows that are really thriving, if they're not these super broad programs like NCIS or sports programming, are the ones that have serialized dramas that really make you want to take to the internet to talk about it, where the water cooler is. And as an ABC Family exec was telling me, it's actually the serialized dramas and not the comedies that perform better in the social TV space.
Right. Well, Joe's, you know, CBS execs would tell us this is all key. cute, but let's be honest, you can't monetize these numbers. We still have the most watched shows in television, and we're making buco bucks because of it.
Yeah, and CBS is also having one of the worst new seasons with their shows rapidly declining. But I'll say this. I don't really get the network's interest in trying to figure out Twitter ratings, and I don't know if I'm an advertiser I'm going to care that much or should care that much about what people are tweeting about, because you're right, it doesn't necessarily correlate to viewers. What I think social TV, specifically Twitter, is great for and why networks love it so much is it's free advertising. It's basically people sort of sending out messages saying, oh my gosh, this show is great. You should be watching it too. I mean, that's one of the reasons a lot of people discovered Scandal and Breaking Bad is because all of their friends, or they saw other people, other tastemakers, other people who have big Twitter followings, tweeting about how great show X is, Scandal or Breaking Bad, and they maybe said, maybe I should check this out. It's giant. It's basically a big digital billboard.
Well, I think that the bigger news recently was Comcast deal with Twitter, so where they're going to embed tweets with links where someone's tweeting about something, you can just click on the click and immediately go to the program that they're talking about.
But social TV goes beyond just driving to. In which we've seen studies, this actually happens. If a show is taking off on Twitter, something like the biggest example of this would be Discovery Channel's Skywire with Nick Wallenda,
right,
where they had actual hard data showing that people were tuning in after seeing it on Twitter. The idea that this somehow isn't applicable to networks or isn't applicable to advertisers, to me, is bunk, because this is showing depth of engagement with a show, which is every advertiser's dream, you know, especially with young demographics. How great would it be if you have a trending topic that is applicable to a certain demographic from a brand?
Yeah, but it, Twitter, do you know how easy it is? I've talked to people inside Twitter. It is so easy. Just because something's trending on Twitter, AJ, does not mean it's absolutely popular with the rest of the country, i.e. Sharknado. Sharknado was huge on Twitter and did tiny ratings. Now, what it did do, though, was it got the word out about Sharknado, and over all the subsequent airings of Sharknado, the ratings went up. So I do think that Twitter absolutely drives people to watch shows because, like I said, it's like advertising. That's why networks put all those billboards up along Sunset Boulevard and everywhere else around the country, is because they want people to watch it. Twitter is basically all of us doing the work for networks and getting people to tune in. Do I think, however, from an advertiser, that just because somebody's engaged in a show, a small sliver of a small percentage of the people who are on Twitter are actually tweeting about that I should pay more for advertising? No. I mean, networks will try to do that, but I think if I'm an advertiser, I'm a fool if I spend more money on an advertisement on a show because, ooh, people talk about it on Twitter. Who cares?
One of the mistakes, though, is thinking that Twitter is the only real player in the social TV space, and Facebook actually is really establishing itself with the release of two API tools. One is the Public Feed Insight tool. The other one is the Keyword Insight tool, the latter being the most interesting. The Keyword Insight tool is able to aggregate anonymous data across all Facebook profiles. Doesn't matter if your profile is private or not. If you're talking about a show like Dancing with the Stars, they're going to make your data anonymous and aggregate it into this big lump of discussion. And they're able to break down the aggregated conversation data into demographics. So they're being, Facebook is now providing texture to social TV data that Twitter isn't able to do, which could be revolutionary for networks, as say they're looking for, say that they're trying to cast the fan favorite season of Dancing with the Stars down the line. Well, what are women in metropolitan areas on Facebook? Which contestant are they the most interested in? They can go to Facebook and find that out now, thanks to these tools.
Well, that's the more interesting debate right now in this. It's not even the network's involvement. It's Facebook versus Twitter. And you talk to some network executives who find Facebook just a better platform for social TV. It's richer content. It's a lot more than 140 characters.
They want to be able to embed their photos and their videos.
Yeah, there's more engagement, and it's just a sort of bigger environment. But, you know, Twitter knows that.
And I'm not on Facebook. So.
Right. And Twitter. Well,
Joe's one of those people. No,
I'm
Facebook.
An old man. I don't know what the Facebook is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but Twitter, they see that and they want to raise it. And they definitely have Facebook in their eyesight.
The issue, though, with Twitter is networks aren't just interested in how many people are watching. They're interested in who is watching. And because Facebook has more incentive to create real-life profiles with actual information about yourself, Facebook has a leg up on them for creating that more textured social TV data than than Twitter, where, you know, what do they say? There's millions of spam bots out there in Twitter's IPO paperwork. So in terms of the accuracy of who's watching, Twitter has still a ways to go.
All right. Well, as I create a fake Facebook profile for Joe and finally get him on that platform, it's time for us to go around the room and talk about what we're sort of fascinated by at this moment in the TV business. It's your download. So, AJ, let's start with you. What's your download?
My life is basically over because I just started watching Scandal on Netflix. Like, literally yesterday, I watched the pilot, right? And because I'm like, what is the hype about this show?
And?
So about 30 minutes into this pilot, I'm like, they're talking so fast. I don't know. It's really overwrought. Does this even happen in the White House? And then there was one scene where, spoiler alert if you haven't watched the pilot, the president and Olivia Pope have a moment, like, in the Oval Office. And I was like, oh, my God, it's addicting. And so I'm down the rabbit hole now. And everything, including this podcast, is standing in between me and more episodes of Scandal. So I guess I'm becoming a gladiator.
Well, Scandal did top the first ever Nielsen Twitter survey. So
yeah.
you're now one of them.
You know, I'm one of the examples of somebody who is catching on a few seasons down the line on Netflix, and is going to catch up into season three that had, you know, some of its highest ratings yet because of the behavior that I'm engaging in right now.
All right, Joe, what's your download?
For me, it's all about Sleepy Hollow right now, which I would argue is the biggest hit of the season. It does not have the most viewers. That would be The Blacklist. It doesn't even have the highest demo ratings, but it's close to The Blacklist. It's doing better than Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and it's doing that without any real lead-in. It follows Bones, which is a 9-year-old show. It's on Fox's Monday Night lineup opposite one of the biggest shows in TV, The Voice, and Monday Night Football, and yet it's doing phenomenal ratings. It's a fun, well-written, wild show with a great cast of people I'd never heard of before. And it shows what you can do when you just make television fun. It's not ponderous, it's not gruesome, but it's a great thrill ride of a TV show. And it's, I think, going to end up being the biggest hit of this new season.
And it's been renewed.
Indeed. And I'm going to go a different direction. What's sort of fascinating me this week. So Aereo, you've heard a lot about it, and you probably don't quite know what it is yet. It's this online service that streams over-the-air programming to paying members. There's basically little antennas in an office somewhere, and it allows users to actually stream broadcast television. Well, the broadcasters obviously are not fans of this idea, and they've now petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court to get involved in their fight against Aereo. Now, networks like CBS have even said, listen, if the Supreme Court approves Aereo, if this thing's legit, then we're yanking our signals off our local TV stations, and from now on, we are going to be a cable network. Now, that threat has sounded hollow so far, but I'm kind of fascinated by this. I almost, sort of the chaos theory in action, I want to see this happen. I almost now want to see the Supreme Court actually uphold Aereo. I want to see the networks yank their signals off stations, go cable only, because who knows what's going to happen after that? Can you imagine the broadcast networks suddenly as cable networks,
you
acting like cable networks?
Just want to watch the world burn.
Local TV stations suddenly with no network content could do crazy stuff. You know, who knows? We could maybe move this podcast over to a local TV station at some point. But I love the idea of chaos because this industry is already filled with chaos. And I think it would be fascinating to see what would a CBS cable or a Fox cable look like. So come on, Supreme Court. Let's make it happen. Thanks, Joe.
Arrivederci, Mike.
And thank you, AJ.
Oh, yeah. See you next time.
That was Joe Adalian, senior editor for Vulture.com. He tweets at TV Mojo. And AJ Marischal, who covers television for Variety. And you can follow her on Twitter at @Variety_AJM. And I'm Mike Schneider, the LA Bureau Chief of TV Guide Magazine. And my Twitter handle is at Franklin Avenue.
TV party tonight!
And that's it for this edition of the TV Podcast from KCRW's The Business. This monthly podcast will be available as part of the business feed. You don't have to do anything else to receive this in addition to your weekly business podcast. This show is produced by Darby Maloney with production assistance from Melissa Morton. Special thanks to the fine people at KUNV Las Vegas. You can find this and other episodes of The Business on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. You can also listen to us on demand with the KCRW smartphone app. I'm Mike Schneider, and we'll see you again next time.
Everybody's gonna hang out here tonight! All right! We'll pass out on the couch!
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.